Thank you for tuning in to the Essential Church Podcast, a church where we focus on restoration over denomination. If you're in the Virginia Beach area and would like to find out more about Essential Church, visit our webpage at essentialchurch.com.
Well, I, for one, have been enjoying the reunion tour this morning, seeing all of our praise team people together. As well as, I just really enjoy being able to sit and enjoy and being a part of worship for a change. My schedule these past 2 years has just been running all over the place, and usually before the first sermon, I'm so focused on the message, I don't really get a chance to really engage in worship. And then I usually miss the second services of worship because I'm usually talking with people at this campus before I jet out of here after the message. And then I get to the other campus so late, I kind of miss it there. And I just sort of realized this morning, it's been almost 2 years before I've just been able to sit in a service and just enjoy and just be captivated and be immersed in worship. And it was just kind of wonderful for a change. And there's so many new faces. Is this y'all's first time at Essential? I'm kidding, all you Town Center folks. I'm kidding. Rebecca walked up to Kay and she goes, "Is this your first time here?" Anyways, so we've been having fun with that this morning. This morning we're going to be looking in the book of Joshua at the life of Caleb. And when I think about Caleb talking with Joshua, I picture Caleb sort of being like Al Pacino in that movie, because Joshua is kind of, he's done. He's ready to move on. And Caleb's like, "I'm just getting warmed up." And he's kind of, goes into this whole speech we're going to look at here in a little bit. But it's one of those moments in that speech there where he keeps having something to say, and somebody's like, "Are you done yet? Are you done yet? Are you done yet?" It's like, no, I'll be done when I'm done. It's sort of like when I'm out to eat and I'm trying to enjoy food. And my problem is I eat really fast. I don't know if y'all are fast eaters or not, but if you're a fast eater, it's very socially awkward if you've completely wiped out your entire bowl of food, like you're famished or something, and the person across from you hasn't even taken the first bite of their sandwich, and you're like, this is awkward. And so I kind of have that thing where I look down at my plate and realize I got 4 French fries left, and I kind of pull the brakes, and I'm like, oh, I better make these 4 last. And then the waitress isn't doing you any favors because she's like, "Oh, you must be done." I'm like, no. If you take this out of here, it's going to look even more awkward, like as if you just bust all my dishes, you've washed my side of the table, and I'm just like here not even eating with him, like I'm on a diet or something. No, it's not right. And so I remember one time I'm out to eat, and like 4 times I had to tell the waitress, "No, these 3 French fries are going to get eaten, and I'm going to take my time doing it, okay? When I'm done, if you need me to, I'll take this back to the kitchen myself. Just please wait till I'm done. I'll put some trash in. I'll signal you when it's time for you to take it, because I want to be done when it's time for me to be done, not just for you to, take the stuff back." And so other times where this happens, like with my kids. Now, my kids are about as close to perfect as they could possibly be. However, on occasion, they're just slightly off perfect, and I have to sit down and have one of those conversations, sort of one of those corrective adjustment kind of conversations. And one time I'm sitting there having the middle of this conversation, and I won't say which child it is. They look back at me, and they say, "Are you done yet?" Okay, now I'll admit, I was done until he asked, "Am I done yet?" Because when he asked, "Am I done yet?" I wasn't done, because I had addressed the fact that you asked me if I'm done yet, like as if I'm wasting your time here and you don't need this and this isn't a part of what you had planned on for the day. And so I just started ranting them out for the fact that, I'm done when I say I'm going to done. And then I started thinking of as many possible things as I possibly could to bring up in this moment, just to let you know how much I've been holding back. And so I kind of lost it, if you will, in the moment when, "Are you done yet?" "Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. No, we're not done. And we're still not done. And so this is going to keep on going." And it's hard sometimes when people want you to be done, but you're not ready yet to be done. And so often there's, sometimes we look to the signs around us and we think maybe it's time to be done, even when we know deep within our soul it's not time to be done. It's so funny, because so often we become like Merlin the magician, trying to divine the signs and the times and the seasons and looking at the stars and throwing out a bowl of, SpaghettiOs, trying to see if we can figure out if it's saying something to us in this moment. And was it alphabet soup? What do they call that stuff? Isn't there some kind of SpaghettiOs that has letters and numbers in it? Yeah, you know what I'm talking about. And so you're like looking in there to see if there's some sort of sign telling me I should quit. And really, I'm just discouraged, and I'm frustrated, and I'm tired, and I want to give up, and I want to tell everybody that we made a good go of it, and I just failed in the whole process of it. But really, I'm just wanting to give up, and I'm just wanting to quit. And so we'll look for some kind of sign that kind of gives me an indication that we should do that. And it's really funny. Even Christians go down these really weird, I got a sign from God sort of moments. Like, I'm talking with a guy in my church in Florida, and he's like, I'm trying to figure out whether or not, I should get married to this girl, and you know, I'm sitting the other night, I just feel like God spoke to me. I'm like, well, what happened? And he's like, well, I'm sitting there, and, you know, she's from New York. I grew up here in South Florida, and it's Monday Night Football, and I turn it on. It's Dolphins versus the Jets. And so, you know, it's right there. I'm like, other than a bad game you're about to watch, what is there? I mean, there's nothing there other than a bad game. I mean, you've got two horrible teams who haven't been anything for the past, you know, 20, 30 years since their quarterback's retired, Namath and Marino. But really, what do they have now? Nothing. There's nothing in there about your future marriage. And so sometimes we're looking for these signs from God, or, you know, like we just, you know, say, oh, I just, you know, I think God just wants us to end. Well, why? Well, because it didn't really work out like I planned. Well, who says that's a sign that it's over? I mean, what works out like it you thought it would? I mean, there's nothing ever turns out like you thought it would. Nothing ever goes into, you know, right according to, everything's right according to plan. You know, I just tell you what, I foresaw every problem, every obstacle, and I had a plan for everything. I had money to cover everything. It's all been going great. Who has ever said that throughout time? Nobody. And yet somehow we think that that's just God telling us that it's time to quit. It's time to give up. It's time to do something else or go in a different direction. And, you know, I think some of our biggest regrets sometime in life are when we've walked away from something that God has called us to. And, you know, the scriptures say in Philippians that he who began a good work will be faithful to complete it in you. And the thing that God has started in you, he wants to finish in you. And sometimes, you know, I don't think God has a crisis of faith. I think he has a crisis of us. It's like, he believes in us far more than we often believe in him when it comes to what he's called us to do and the task before us. And so when you get to the end of the book of Joshua, Joshua chapter about 14 to 21 or so, what's happened is that they fought all the major battles. I mean, they were going into the promised land. Just to kind of give you a quick history here. Moses, they're all slaves in Egypt, and Moses brings them out of Egypt, through the Red Sea, out to Mount Sinai, where they stop off, they get the Ten Commandments, and they make a beeline over towards the Promised Land, and they were ready to go enter into it. And eventually, I'm going to get to that in a minute. Eventually, they can go and take it under Joshua's leadership many years later. And after they've taken all the major fortified cities and they're ready to land the plane on the carrier and pronounce mission accomplished, Joshua's there about to divvy up all of the land to everybody and kind of give everybody their piece of the pie that they've worked so hard for. And he says, kind of at the end of the summary statement for this part of the scriptures, Joshua 21, it says, "And the Lord gave them rest on every side, just as he had sworn to their ancestors. Not one of their enemies withstood them. The Lord gave all their enemies into their hands." And so he says he gave them a rest. And this word rest is kind of a transitional state. There's the battle and there's the hard time that you go through. And then over here, even today, you'll hear Jewish people talk about the shalom of God. It's this state of rest. It's a state of, you know, the world as it should be. It's the Garden of Eden state, return to earth once again. And they're pursuing once again the shalom of God that was lost in the garden. And so, you know, after the way that you get there is, you know, after there's this battle that's fought, there's this time of rest as you look to enter into shalom. And rest is like that feeling maybe some of y'all had yesterday, because it was like the first perfect day of fall yesterday, right? Y'all been looking forward to that day, right? Like God air-conditioned the entire world for you. Isn't that just great? You can leave the windows open. Don't have to yell at the kids to close the door because it's cooler outside than it is inside. And for maybe some of you, there's like been some yard projects you've been putting off and you're thinking to yourself, I don't want to do it when it's too hot out. I don't want to wait till it's freezing cold out. And yesterday was just the perfect day to get it done. And so you went through and you tackled the jungle that was your backyard. You took out, you've got this big old heaping pile. You know, you're thinking to yourself, the lawn guys got it in for them when they come by my house this week. But after you finished all of that, you took a shower, you went on the back porch, got yourself an Arnold Palmer, sat down in your favorite lawn chair, and looked out and just surveyed and enjoyed everything that you've been able to accomplish and do, and you just kind of relaxed, you took in the smells, and you had a rest. And that's what he's saying here. It's been after a long, difficult, hard time. He says, you know, we're now able to enter into a rest. And maybe some of y'all have been going through a hard time, and you're saying, I just want a time where I can just rest, and I just want to relax. I don't want everything to be a struggle. I don't want everything to be month to month. I just want to get to the place where I can just kind of catch my breath for a season. And so he's announcing to the people, we're at that stage. You can catch your breath now. You can rest, because everywhere we've gone, God's given our enemies over into our hands. And so he's about to divide up the land to all the people. And in Joshua chapter 14, it says, "Now the people of Judah approached Joshua at Gilgal, and Caleb," I'm not even going to say who he's the son of, I can't even pronounce these names. He says, "Lord, you know what Moses said," or you know what the Lord said to Moses, the man of God, at Kadesh Barnea about you and me. He's like, you and I, we got some history, you know, Moses. By the way, Joshua and Caleb are the only two guys to have accompanied Moses coming out of Egypt that are still around, because everybody else died in the wilderness over the 40-year wandering period. And so just Joshua and Caleb are the only two remnants left that have memories from back in that time. And he says, hey, you and me, we go way back. And let me remind you of something maybe you might have forgotten. He says, I was 40 years old when Moses, the servant of the Lord, sent us into the land to give back a report. And I brought him back a report according to my convictions. That's really important. According to my convictions. Now, over in the book of Numbers, you'll see telling of this story. I think it's Numbers chapter 13. It says that Moses sent them out in the land to survey the land, to look over the land. And he says, you know, see what's there. You know, how many people are there? Are they weak? Are they strong? Few or many? What kind of land do they live in? What kind of towns do they live in? Is it walled or fortified? How's the soil? Is it fertile or poor? Are the trees, you know, in or not? Do your best to bring back some of the fruit of the land. This is all in Numbers chapter 13. Anyways, check it out. Go and see, really, is this really the land of promise? Is this really a land flowing in milk and honey? Is this really everything God has built it up to be? Because we've been out here in the wilderness, we've been in Egypt, and we've been telling there's this wonderful land. Is it really everything God says it is? And so they send one representative from each of the 12 families or each of the 12 tribes. And so Caleb and Joshua happen to be two of the 12 that get sent in. And so they go in there and they look around. And it says they explored the land. We're in Numbers chapter 13, but we'll get back over to Joshua in a minute. He says, they looked through the land, they went up through the Negev, they came to Hebron, where the descendants of Anak lived. Now, you may not know Anak or descendants of Anak or anything like that, but you do know one of people in Anak's family. Later on down the road, you'll find that there is a descendant of Anak, which is named Goliath. Maybe you've heard of him. Now, just picture Goliath and all his family tree are in this land. You can imagine there's like a whole colony of Goliaths there, okay? And so he says, you know, ooh, that was there. And there's a bunch of other people throughout. It says, then they went down to the valley of Eshcol, and they cut off branches bearing a single cluster of grapes. And it took two of them to carry it on a pole between them, along with some pomegranates and some figs. Now, I have a guess as to which two carried back the fruit from the land. Do you think you know who my guess is? Joshua and Caleb. Okay, if you want to play along, you're welcome too. Joshua and Caleb, I believe, are the two that, because I didn't even name anybody else in the group. How could you have any other names? Do you all know the rest of the guys' names who were there? Okay, it was an easy question then. Who do you think brought back, you know, the grapes? Yeah, there's somebody who knows. All right, good. So Joshua and Caleb, I think, probably didn't say, but I think they're probably the ones who brought it back. Because when they get back to Moses, they bring all the Israelites together, and they say, so how was it? Was it the land flowing in milk and honey? They say, you bet it was. Look at these grapes right here. How you like them apples? And so they says, well, this is amazing. And so this says, we can do this. And so Caleb says, listen, we should go up and take possession of this land because we can certainly do it. But the other 10 men who'd gone up with him said, we can't attack these people. They're stronger than we are. And they spread word among the Israelites, a bad report about the land they'd explored. And they said, yeah, the land we explored, it devours those living in it. And all the people there are of great size. No, just the Anakites were of great size. Everybody else was like normal size. But all the people now are of great size. And we saw the Nephilim, the descendants of Anak. And we look like grasshoppers in our own eyes, and we look like grasshoppers to some of them. Why, did you ask them? Did you come up and say, hey, big man, I'm about to take your city. What do you think of me? No, you didn't say that. It's sort of like when I was in football in high school. We'd go to, you know, the other, visiting school. We'd get off the bus, or we'd see, visiting school come, and they get off the bus, and instantly you're like, oh, my gosh, these guys are huge. We're going to get destroyed. And then, you forget over time, what your team's capable of, what you can do, and what your game is. And then you kind of get in the throes of the game, and you realize, we can really do this. And, of course, your coach is like, he would always see us staring and knew what was going on. He's like, hey, focus over here. You focus on what you need to do. You don't got to worry about what they're going to do. They need to worry about what you're going to do. And so you have to get back and focus. And I can just picture them in that moment. They're like, they're huge. We can't do this. But Caleb says, I brought back a report according to my convictions. I'm not denying there's some big boys over there. I'm not denying the descendants of Anak over there. But I had a conviction that this is the promised land. And not only did God promise it would be a good land, he also promised he would give us this land. And if God is for us, it doesn't matter who's against us. So I gave a report according to my convictions that if God's called us to it, he's going to see us through it. And I'm not giving up, and I'm not quitting, I'm not turning back. Everybody else may look at the problem and the situation at hand and say, well, that's it, we're done. Clearly this is a sign from God. These people are too big. We need to go back to Egypt. And Caleb's like, I gave a report according to my convictions. So I want to remind you of that, Joshua. Here we are some 40 years on later. On that day, I gave a report according to my convictions. Let me go back up to Joshua. It says, so just as the Lord promised to keep me alive these 45 years, since the time of Moses, he said to Israel as they moved about in the wilderness, here I am today, I'm 85 years old. I'm still strong today as the day Moses sent me out. I love that. You may look at me as some old man. I'm 85 years old, but I'm still as strong as I ever was. I'm just as vigorous to go out as battle now as I was then. So now give me the hill country that God promised me that day, that you yourself heard that the Anakites were there and the cities were large and fortified. But with the Lord helping me, I'll drive them out just as he said we would. So then Joshua blessed Caleb and gave him Hebron as his inheritance. See, what Caleb is pointing out, he's saying, listen, you remember because you and I were the only two who spotted out the land and said we could do this, that God promised us we could have whatever place we wanted. We got first dibs. So before you go and divide up the land to everybody else, just remember, I got dibs. I got first choice. And the place I want is that place where the Anakites are. You see, I'm not ready to be put out the pasture. I'm not ready to give up. I'm not ready to quit. Maybe the rest of y'all are ready to enter a rest, but I'm not ready to enter any rest right now. I've still got a battle to fight. There's a hill country up there with some of the descendants of Anak, all right? And they may be big, and they may be strong, and there's still a battle to fight there. And there's a peace to be won and a peace to be given. And I don't want to go just enjoy some inheritance. I don't want to go just enjoy some house on a lake, some villa by the sea. I know I could choose anywhere in this land I want. I want the battle that's still to be fought. Then you notice what it says next? And so Joshua blessed Caleb. Joshua blessed Caleb. What was the blessing that Joshua gave to Caleb? You want to fight? Take it. You see, that should like surely mess up and challenge all of our views and understanding of the blessing, shouldn't it? Because typically when we read the blessing of God came upon him, what we're looking for is something like, you know, peace and serenity, you know, a life of ease and comfort. Everything, you know, has been taken care of. Everything's worked out. Vacation city is ahead. You win the lottery, whatever it may be. The blessing of God has fallen upon you, right? When was the last time you associated the blessing of God with a battle that needed to be fought? And here it says that Joshua blessed Caleb and said, you want a war? You go take that war. You want that hill? You want an uphill battle? You go take up the uphill battle against a bunch of giants. You want that? May God be with you and God bless you in it. And you can just picture this 85-year-old man. I've been telling every generation since we could take that hill, and I've been saying for the past 45 years we could take that hill, and we ain't taking that hill yet, Joshua. How come we didn't take the hill? We all went through the whole land. You skipped that hill. I noticed you skipped that hill. I said we could take that land, and even you missed it. Even you dodged it. I'm taking that hill before I die. I'm not done yet. Y'all can rest if you want to. I'm not. And there was a resolve within him that said, I want that hill. I don't want to enter any rest. I want to create a rest for somebody else. I'm not tired. I'm not satisfied. I'm not comfortable. I'm not finished just because y'all are finished. We're done when I say we're done. I'm done when I say I'm done. You're not going to tell me to quit at this point. But all the other people, they looked at it way back when, and they said, no, we can't go in. And Caleb's been saying for 45 some odd years, yes, we can. Yes, we can. Yes, we can. And by golly, he did it. As it goes on, and sure enough, Caleb goes up and takes that land and has been known in his family ever since. You know, every blessing that God has in store for us almost always has a battle between here and that blessing. And yet we bail out and we bail out and we bail out because since the blessing didn't just get handed us to on a silver platter, we assume that must not be God's blessing. See, blessings from God sometimes are like, reminds me of the island that's outside of my parents' house in Tennessee. They live on a lake in Tennessee, on Lake Norris, and there's this island. I mean, it's just right across. I mean, it's just not a very far distance. And, you know, every morning you wake up and you just kind of see the Smoky Mountains, you know, rise, the mists rise above this island. And so one day I had a friend of mine here from, you know, Virginia Beach out there with me, and, you know, our families are both there, and we're looking at the island. We're just sitting there on lawn chairs one night, and we're like, you know, we should swim to the island, man. We should swim over there. And you know how guys get, like, yeah, we should swim over the island. That'd be awesome. Wouldn't it be awesome just to swim to the island? Yeah. So we start high-fiving. We're gonna do this. Okay, I'm going to do this. If you're going to do this, you're going to do this. I'm going to do this. So it's like one of those macho things, whatever. We get up to dinner that night, you know, tell the wives, hey, we're swimming to the island tomorrow. And the kids are like, wow, you are a hero. You are amazing. Can I do it with you? No, you're just a son. You're just a little boy right now, you know. When you man up, when you get old, listen, I was on the swim team in seventh grade. I know a few things, all right? My glory years aren't done. Yeah, that's right. I was on the swim team in seventh grade. I didn't last much past that, but I was on the swim team back then. We're doing this. And so sure enough, you know, the kids are cheering us on. Dad, dad, dad. So me and a friend, we jump in the water. We're swimming. Michael Phelps style. You know, we're thinking, you know, we could do the English Channel, man. You know, you're just swimming out. There's like this little cove that, you know, they're all in there. And so you get out, we just get outside past the cove, out in the open water, and it's still feeling good. We can still hear the cheers of the kids on the shore, and we're going and we're going. But, you know, somewhere around the middle of the lake, it dawns on you, you're an idiot. And you say to the person you're swimming with, why did you say we should do this? Because it's no longer your idea. It was clearly his idea. I wanted no part of this. I'm just going along because that's the kind of friend I am. And then the next thought in your mind is, if one of us drowns out here, there's no out here on this. This lake is 600 feet deep. This used to be a valley that the Tennessee Power Authority flooded back in the 1920, whatever it was. There's whole cities buried under this lake that people haven't seen for almost 100 years now. And if we were to drown, the other person could do nothing more than point the Coast Guard and say, he went down here. That's about it. And the thought comes to mind, why didn't we have at least one of the kids or one of the wives bring a kayak or something alongside us just in case something happened? But, you know, all of that's gone now. There's no hope for that. You can't yell back to the shore. All you can do is swim. And you're starting to think to yourself, why are we swimming against the current? We must be swimming against the current. We're not getting anywhere. And you swim and you swim and you swim, and you're just dog tired. And you're thinking, this hell will never end. Yes, I said the word hell because that's what it feels like. It is an absolute hell on earth when you're swimming and your muscles give out and you think you're about to drown, and you just keep going and going because you have no other option. It's either death or get to the other side, right? Well, eventually, if you just keep going and going and going, you don't quit, you don't give up, eventually you'll notice as your strokes go down in the water gets a little bit more muddy, because you're turning up something from the bottom, and it's getting shallower and shallower, and pretty soon you get to the other side. And you sit on the beach, and you look back over, and you think, wow, we did it. And you wave to the kids on the other side, and then the voice inside of your head becomes very audible because the person next to you starts saying your thoughts like, how are we going to get back? That boat that could have saved our lives from drowning also could give us a ride back now. And so now we're kind of going like this, and they think we're going like this, and eventually they get the picture and send a jet ski over to get us back. But every blessing from God's just like that. This amazing euphoria that awaits for you on the other side only comes after the long, hard middle. You know, people look at other people in church, they say, you know, I hear people and talk about their life groups, and I just see that, you know, they've got, you know, people there who come visit in the hospital and help them pack up their moving truck when they move, and, you know, come over and hang out on the weekends, and they have somebody to hang out with, and these lifelong friends, and I want something like that. How come I don't have something like that in my church? I'm like, well, why don't you join a small group? Well, I tried, but the people were kind of, it's just hard to make time for it. Like, okay, listen. You don't want to go through the long, hard middle to find community, but you want community. It doesn't work that way. You want the blessing of community. You've got to push through, and you've got to put forth the effort, and you've got to be a friend as you're seeking to find a friend. Or other people will say, you know, I just want to find the love of my life. I just want to find the love of my life. And say, well, you really want the love of your life? I mean, because the love of your life is somebody that you're going to sacrifice for and give to and have to forgive because they're going to let you down time and time again. There is no perfect person out there that you're going to meet them and all the stars are going to align and it's going to be this absolute perfect euphoria for all your life. And, it comes down to the question is not do you want to find the love of your life, but do you just want to be loved? Because if you just want to be loved, good luck with that. If you want to find the love of your life, you've got to be willing to love and to sacrifice and give. And there's a battle to be fought. You know, when you prayed for the blessing of marriage, there's a battle there, isn't there? A lot of people think marriage is a wedding. Everybody loves to be weddinged. I wish I could be weddinged every week. Wedding is fun. Everybody comes, they celebrate, they bring you gifts, you have fun, there's a band, there's a DJ, whatever it is, you have a lot of fun, you do some stupid things out on the dance floor, but who cares because it's wedding time. Marriage is a blessing. That's going to be a little code from this point forward for everybody who goes to Essential. How are things in life? How is your marriage? It's a blessing. It's a blessing every day. Caleb-style blessing is what it is. But, you know, there's a battle to be fought there, but it's worth it. If you've ever been to a 50th wedding anniversary, it's worth it. Whenever people pass one of those milestone anniversaries, my favorite question to ask is, tell me about the time and season when you wanted to give up and quit. And it's funny because they'll kind of look at you funny and then be like, they'll kind of look at their spouse like, I'm going to tell them. There was this time, and they go into this whole story, and you realize this wasn't as easy as it looks. And you see these people, they've been married 40 years, and you think, I want that kind of marriage that's easy. Ask them just how easy those 40 years have been. It's been a blessing. Oh, it's been a blessing. You know, Jesus in the garden, if he looked for the signs from God like you and I look for signs from God, and he cried out and he said, Father, if there's any way that you could take this cup from me, what would he have concluded? Well, let me look at the signs here. Let's see. One of my best friends right now is in the process of betraying me. One of my other best friends, who I'm going to leave, you know, turn over this whole movement to, is going to deny me in the next 24 hours. Another one of my friends isn't going to believe anything that happened, and he's just going to doubt everything he comes in contact with. Two other guys have been asking me for something I can't give them. Crowds and throngs of people were, you know, praising me just a few days ago, and now they're going to be chanting, crucify, crucify, crucify. And pretty soon I'll be hung on a cross and be separated from the Trinity as I take upon the sins of the world. Yeah, I think if there's ever been a sign that it's time to give up and quit, I think now everybody's telling me that we're done, we're finished. And there was just something within him that had a sense of resolve that says, no, it's not finished until I say it's finished. And so he went and he bore the sins for you and for me. And as he breathed his last, he cried out that it is finished. It is finished. And there is a blessing that he entered into. And more than that, it was a blessing that he invited all of us to share in. But the blessing that Jesus provided was up a hill in a battle. And the blessing that Caleb sought was up a hill, and it was a battle. And we're not done until I say we're done. And some people ask, well, you know, with us, you know, moving from town center over to Salem, does this mean that we're done? Does this mean that we've lost the battle? We've given up on the battle? No, the battle is the city. The battle is the fact that there's 7 out of 10 people in the city which we live in. We're still in the midst of that 10-mile radius, that we're 7 out of 10 people that live right around where we're sitting right now do not have a relationship with Jesus Christ. That is the battle. And we're never done with that battle. And this whole thing started at a time where people kept looking at me and saying, you know, Steve, this really isn't any point. You should give up. You should quit. You should leave. I said, no, this is where God called me. Even when every single sign said give up and quit, people said, you know, we started this church in 2009, February 2009. Remember what happened in 2008? Everything bad happened in 2008. The economy was in the tank. The housing market had burst. Nobody had a dollar. How are you possibly going to raise funds to start a church in this climate? You should go somewhere else. No, this is where God called me. It's not over till I say it's over. And then, you know, we launched the church, and there was like everybody was, you know, houses were up for sale because nobody wanted to move here. They were talking about closing Oceana Base. Why would you start a church in a city where nobody wants to live anymore? This place is going to be a ghost town in a couple years once the military pulls out. And I kept thinking to myself, time out. First of all, God's called me here. I'm not leaving. Second of all, you think we're going to abandon the one ship port that leads straight up to the Washington Monument and the White House? No. Sorry, there's always going to be a military presence here. Come on. And on and on and on, the naysayers went. Does this city really need another church? Because somebody who comes here from other places in the country don't realize how many churches are in the South. They go, there's more churches here in the West. Why could there possibly need another church here? I said, well, you know, clearly, 70% of the city has not found a church that connects with them. Maybe, just maybe, there's a need for a church that can rock out the Neil Diamond, AC/DC, and Zac Brown while packaging up 50,000 meals for people. Maybe, just maybe. And now I know of a place. A place unlike any other. I don't know if you guys realize this. You guys are not like a normal church. We're barely even fit the definition, maybe, of church. Unless you look at the scriptural one, I guess. We just want to remove every non-essential barrier between people and God. We want to be an authentic representation of who Jesus Christ was to our community. And we want to love people just like Christ has loved them. And it's messy and it's dirty. But we're not done yet. And it's funny, when it came to Town Center, I've asked a lot of questions. Are we done at Town Center? And my answer is no. I plan on, you know, going back to the area. And had one person who's in this room right now look at me and says, well, I'm not done at Town Center. And he's been putting out flags every single week and putting out banners and putting out signs. And he says, you know, I'm still going to be doing that. But we're not meeting there. I don't care. There's still people who are going to see those signs. They need to know where to go. They need to know about this church still. It's not done until I say it's done. How do you argue with an attitude like that? Seriously, how do you argue with an attitude like that, Erwin? So I'm not going to say who it was. As you cry out for a blessing from God, know that the blessing you may be crying out for is a battle. And everybody else around you may say, give up, you're done, it's over, just throw it in. This isn't like you thought it would be. This isn't working out like you thought it would. Clearly, that's a sign from God to hit the eject button. I love Caleb. Nope. I may be 85, and you may think my best years are behind me. You may think that your whole life's been squandered and wasted away. But if at 85, he's ready to go take on an uphill battle against giants, what blessing are you seeking from God right now? And will you be able to face the battle when it comes? Let's pray. Father, I thank you, Father, for your blessings. My life motto is to simply live for the blessing. Lord, early on in my life, I thought I was living for some wonderful utopian day of rest and relaxation. But Father, I found it's a battle to win the hearts of this city. And the blessing I want to be a part of is seeing this city changed. To see military members from all over the country come in here ready to fight a war. And leave here finding that you've already fought the war for their soul. Father, may we embrace the blessing that you put before us. The blessing of community, of marriage, of family. And recognize that it's not all roses. This uphill battle that's before me truly is your blessing. May we have that same resolve of Jesus Christ to not give up and to not quit. That we too might create a blessing that others can enjoy and share in. In Jesus' name we pray. Amen.
Thank you for listening to the Essential Church Podcast. Let me encourage you to pause for a moment and reflect on what you've heard. It's not the hearing of the word, but the application that makes all the difference.